Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a good football show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Denny Carter, where we are going to talk the biggest questions coming out of week one, including the nuclear level accident with the 49ers and whether Urban Meyer is actually serious about this Carlos Hyde thing. But first, Denny, we're through week one. We're through a slate of actual games. We have data to pore over and obsess with. And I'm just kind of wondering about your state of mind. And on a scale of 1 to 5 jokers, how many jokers would you say you're at right now?
That's good. You know, I'm going to go 2.5. I'm going to take the centrist answer. And I'm going to say 2.5 jokers, because on some level I am jokerfied, but on other levels the surprises from this week didn't really affect me in redraft the way that it may have affected people who don't draft ideologically. and by that, I mean, I've never even looked at Brandon Ayuk on a draft board. So that was, that worked out.
So 2.5 jokers, I think that's more just like, you're going to like put a nail under like someone's thick construction shoe. So it'll just scare them, you know, won't actually hurt them. That's good. You could still go back to 1 joker if you're going to set 2.5 jokers.
How about you?
The thing I was most jokerfied by in week one is something we're going to talk about, Brandon Ayuk, because it was I only have him in one of my redraft leagues. I believe only one. Well, I have him in my dynasty league. He's like the centerpiece of my receiver strategy in dynasty. I have horrible receivers. And like my most tilting decision I made, I don't know why this is, I have 2 home leagues, and my second home league, I really, really wanted LaVisca Chenault as my third receiver, but I had really gone like all upside with like my first like 4 or 5 picks. And I was like, I guess I'm just going to go by the board. I'm going to go Brandon Ayuk. But I was like super mad about it. Like I was like one of those decisions I instantly regretted. You know, I just made it with like time winding down on the clock. So I was like pre-upset about having Brandon Ayuk over LaVisca Chenault. And then, you know, the tweets start rolling in about 1:08 Eastern on Sunday. Yeah. Like, Brandon Ayuk's been cut? ?
He wasn't.
He was not cut, folks. That definitely upped to the Joker level in this household.
For sure. By the way, you made the right call. I mean, I think everybody would take Ayuk over Chenault. There was no reason to think, especially after the glowing preseason and training camp reports about Ayuk dominating practices, the peripherals from his first year. I mean, come on, that was the right call. And, you know, it could still pay off. His career is not over, I don't think.
No, tell that to Dante Pettis. It sends me wondering, like, is Kyle Shanahan like a good talent evaluator? Like, I think he is, but he seems like a very emotional talent evaluator. Yes. Like, he traded up for Dante Pettis, you know, within like, and then he closed his rookie season really strong. And then he was just like never heard from again. He trades up. I don't remember if he traded up for Brandon Ayuk. I don't remember if he traded up for Trey Sermon, but he makes like really aggressive moves for guys.
Yes.
And then like falls in and out of love so quickly. And I'm wondering if Kyle Shanny would be one of those guys who'd be better off having like the personnel keys taken away from him.
Volatile, emotional is a good word. whatever it is. I mean, you can, if you watch a press conference with Kyle Shanahan, you can see he's a guy who cares a lot. And that's good. You know, probably has served him well. But it ends with him becoming obsessed with certain players and immediately dismissing others in this way that drives fantasy managers crazy. And I know we're going to get into the Niners because it's probably the biggest storyline of week one. But I don't think fantasy managers should take the direction of dismissing the Niners. We don't know. We can't know. We don't know. I don't want anything to do with them. I think that's the wrong approach. We'll get into that in a minute.
I will say with Shanny too, like I just think looking back on Dante Pettis, like he was a guy Shanahan like really aggressively targeted, traded up for, but then like really quickly fell out of love. And you know, like Dante Pettis hasn't done anything away from San Francisco. And so I wonder if like the problem is on like the front end. Like Shanahan, maybe he's making like clear-eyed player evaluations once they're on the roster, but if he just like falls like too in love in the evaluation process, this is, you know, a question we're going to be able to easily solve the next few weeks. Is Kyle Shanahan a good talent evaluator? Let's just jump right into the 49ers discussion and what it might mean going forward. It's like, first off, Denny, how much fab are we going to spend on Elijah Mitchell this week? Which I know they talked about also on John Daigle and Patrick Crane's waiver wire show. Check that out. And would you have been prepared to drop Trey Sermon if Raheem Mostert had not injured his knee? Just give me your state of mind on the 49ers backfield.
As far as bidding for Mitchell, so I thought back immediately when he took over the backfield after the Mostert injury to what Matt Maiocco from NBC Sports told me when I was asking him about the 49ers depth chart and their backfield. And Matt made it a point of mentioning Elijah Mitchell as a guy who had surged up the depth chart, who had impressed in OTAs, who had impressed in the preseason, and you know, someone to keep an eye on. Now, I wish I had taken Matt's advice and done just that. Unfortunately, I don't have Elijah Mitchell rostered anywhere. As for bidding on him, less than half, I would say. I think over half, you're getting a little bit ahead of your skis, perhaps, in an unpredictable backfield. You know, like we just talked about, you know, Trey Sermon was inactive for week one, shockingly. He could be active and get 10 carries next week.
He could start, yeah.
Right. And he could get 15 carries. Who knows? You know, so I wouldn't go all in. But Elijah Mitchell was a pretty good prospect. Pat Corain talked yesterday with John Daigle about how Mitchell is actually, profiles as a great athlete, like a superb plus athlete. So, you know, there's reason to believe that he could be the primary back. That doesn't mean that he's going to be Derrick Henry. You know, I think that's the thing everybody would expect. Well, not expect, but, you know, people would dismiss him and say he's not going to get every carry. Well, yeah, we're not. You know,
those NFL running backs are famous for getting every carry in 2021.
Right, exactly.
So, I guess we did get the emergence of a new one, by the way. Joe Mixon, 100% snap player.
Yeah.
We're counting on you, Joe. With Elijah Mitchell, I think a conservative bid makes sense to me. So first, I do like Elijah Mitchell a lot too. All like the dynasty gurus liked him. Pat Crane really liked him a lot. I did dynasty rankings this summer and just digging into the research, he was someone I really like. The profile just made a lot of sense, especially with Kyle Shanahan. You know, a guy with like sub 4.4 speed, if the timing was to be believed last year, you know, no combine, yeah, things yeah. A little different. Yeah, pretty good. He has decent size at 5'10". He's not like a scat back or anything like that. He was someone I really liked. And like when all this was unfolding Sunday, I was having the thought process like, I think I drafted Elijah Mitchell. And I checked out my dynasty team and I had not drafted Elijah Mitchell. You should always follow your heart. If you like someone, you got to draft him. I did that with Kenny Yeboah. That really worked out.
It did.
The Jets tight end. But the conservative bid, I think, makes sense. Like, I would, you know, you're probably going to lose him, but I would say in like that 20 to 33% range. And like if the whole league happens to be conservative on him, you might end up winning him. I'd be comfortable losing on Elijah Mitchell just because, yeah, I think Trey Sermon could be the starter as early as this week. I mean, they have now a week to game plan because, like, you know, Raheem Mostert goes down like the opening moments of the game. Like Jermichael Hasty could actually be a part of the game plan this week. It's a ways away, but like Jeff Wilson could be coming back. He's on the PUP list, so he's not going to be back for like 5 or 6 games. But like Elijah Mitchell, I just wouldn't be surprised if what was it, like 10 to 12 carries, 10 to 12 touches. Like, if they viewed that as like his ceiling for a week and they don't want to like overextend him, and you certainly want even bit players in the 49ers backfield. But right. Yeah, I think Elijah Mitchell, he doesn't look like the must have to me so far, like the early season waivers. And you want to make a really aggressive bid on waivers, usually within the first few weeks, because that's when like a lot of like the league winners emerge. But I think we're going to have better options basically than Elijah Mitchell.
That's probably true. I should say that unless you're running back hungry, which of course I am into, you know, perpetuity, you shouldn't be bidding on Elijah Mitchell. There's no reason to pick, you know, to spend 20 or 30% of your fab money and have a difficult decision of starting him over a borderline flex play or something. So only if you like largely faded running backs, if you lost one of your main running backs in the first couple weeks, and you know, in the last week of preseason, I'm thinking Gus Edwards, you know, personally, and are in need of a running back who's going to see decent snaps. And remember, Mitchell got 83% of the backfield work after Mostert went down. So it's, you know,
he's a little higher than I remembered.
Yeah, he profiles as a he didn't get that touchdown. Hasty got that touchdown, which
a damn shame.
Stung a little bit for the hopes that, you know, he would be the unquestioned goal line back, talking about Mitchell. But yeah, it depends on your roster on whether you really want to go in on Mitchell.
Yeah, I would just say the takeaway for Elijah Mitchell, we don't know what the true usage is going to be, because this was the 49ers having to make it up on the fly. Maybe they should have been expecting Raheem Mostert to get hurt, but they weren't expecting Raheem Mostert to get hurt like when they made their Sunday up-down decisions. And that it's hard to believe, yeah, Elijah Mitchell is going to be like a 75% touch player on the 49ers week two backfield. By the way, you referenced Gus Edwards. I think on the scale of jokers, when Gus Edwards got hurt, that was about a 4.75, 4.8 for you. That was getting near the top.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been so tilted over an injury, and obviously best to Edwards and Dobbins and Hill and everybody else who busted their knee in Ravens training camp in the preseason. But wow, that was one of the more shocking. And they lost Marcus Peters in the same back-to-back plays. And then Harbaugh shut down the practice. Can you imagine being there? Can you imagine the mood? It must have been like a funeral.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you brought out the groundskeeper and like was screaming at him in front of the whole team and like made him get down and like stare at the turf.
You're right.
What is going on here? So Gus Edwards, though, you were like joyriding around in a stolen police car, like outside the Metropolitan Opera level of jokering, right?
Yes.
I think that happened in the movie Joker. I've seen the film Joker. I believe that was something that happened in it. So the Trey Sermon thing is one thing for the 49ers. A day two rookie, even if it's someone we have aspirations for, kind of being left off the game day 46-man roster for his NFL debut is not unheard of. By the way, even though Kyle Shanahan did nothing to dispel the notion that he liked Trey Sermon, I'm feeling a little more jokerfied by this as we go on in the show, actually.
Well, he said after the game, he said he's not one of our top three running backs, so what do you want me to do?
Oh, my Lord.
I mean, what? I heard some whispers about, you know, well, he was practicing with the practice squad in the week before the game. You know, we pay pretty close attention to those things, and I never heard anything like that.
Would have been nice to know. But so Trey Sermon's one thing. Brandon Ayuk falling behind Trent Sherfield on the depth chart, you know, after Ayuk was one of the 49ers is like lone bright spots in 2020. Like, that is something else entirely. And the way I had this question written down was, is Ayuk in the Dante Pettis zone? I mean, we know it's not that bad yet. I mean, Dante Pettis was like a special. I think Ayuk was playing on special teams though Sunday.
He was returning punts.
Yeah. So that's great. He's not quite in the Dante Pettis zone yet. But, you know, what is your level of fear, concern, worry with Brandon Ayuk? Maybe any hope this was just like a week one, like pseudo disciplinary thing? Like, where are you at on Brandon Ayuk?
Yeah. So, it was reported, and we have a blurb on this from Monday, that Brandon Ayuk is apparently still learning to be a professional.
Same.
Same. Exactly. I have no idea how to be a professional. I'm trying to play act one, you know, so that should adjust our ranks maybe a little. I honestly think it's the hamstring. Every time Shanahan, he talked about it twice, and both times he mentioned the hamstring, and then he started talking about, well, Sherfield played really well in the preseason and in camp, so we wanted to give him a chance. But I think this is a short-term thing. As soon as Ayuk is, I think, 100%, and with hamstring issues, who knows?
Never linger.
It could go on. But if he gets right in the next couple weeks, next 3 weeks maybe, I think we'll see him back to his normal, you know, snap count, which, you know, was significant last year.
I might be reading too much into this, but the Shanahan comments you referenced, like, I wanted the order of those comments reversed. Like, he talked about the hamstring, but then he seeped into, well, Sherfield, though, kind of earned it in training camp, too. Like, to me, if I'm a coach, like, if I'm trying to be, like, PC, like, you know, not give anything away in my press conference, I would have started, well, you know, Trent Sherfield, I would have tried to, like, I think a normal coach would have tried to, like, butter up Trent Sherfield before admitting the truth. Yeah, I know. Actually, it was really just about the hamstring.
Yeah, yes, you're right.
But instead, he did the reverse order, where it was almost like he was trying. He knew it was such a crazy, controversial thing. He's trying to defend it. Well, he's healthy, and then he just like couldn't. He wasn't healthy, but then he just like couldn't help like getting out the truth. Well, actually, I love Trent Sherfield. If you really want to know, if you really, really want to get the. It's because Trent's amazing, and he's better than Brandon Ayuk. You're happy now.
I said, yeah, it was a weird backtrack, you know, and. Again, I mean, every Kyle Shanahan press conference is super strange.
They're almost Belichickian. He's definitely he's got some levels of Belichick. Like he tries to be more like approachable, but kind of fails at it.
Yeah. I mean, he's way more animated than Belichick. It's like if Belichick had you know drank the coffee amounts that Dan Campbell consumes on an everyday basis. That's Kyle Shanahan.
Do you think Bill Belichick has ever had coffee? Do you think Bill Belichick, if you're more likely to guess, does Bill Belichick drink 50 ounces of coffee a day or 0 ounces of coffee a day?
Man, that's a good question. He had to go with zero.
Yeah, I'm going with zero. He just seems like one of those natural crack of dawn people thinks coffee is like a weakness.
Yeah.
Like, don't want to be addicted to a stimulant, which, you know, fair opinion. I'm addicted to a socially acceptable stimulant, but it's a stimulant. Caffeine, and I bet Bill Belichick views that as a sign of weakness.
Oh, for sure. He might actually brew a pot of coffee and then dump it out as a show of strength.
Yeah, I think I saw that in one of those NFL Network documentaries. It begins with him just pouring coffee into like the shower drain for some reason. They never explain why it's the shower drain and not the sink, but that's where he pours out the pot of coffee. He makes every morning.
Speaking of Belichick, I saw your tweet last night, and I too am happy that they finally made a documentary about how people doubted Tom Brady 22 years ago.
Yeah, you know, when Tom Brady was in, there's an explosive clip in that documentary where Tom Brady, he was in seventh grade, and he was already 6'2". And there was a teacher telling him, though, that he would never grow to be 6'4". And he proved that teacher wrong.
Right.
There's so much doubt of Tom Brady growing up.
He was a stellar athlete and the best quarterback to ever come out of his county who no one believed in.
Yeah, no one ever believed in him. So, yeah, check it out. But Ayuk, by the way, I mean, there's no way Ayuk actually falls out of these top three 49ers receivers. But I think the greater Ayuk concern remains, even if he gets back into his normal role. Like last year, there was really never a time where Ayuk was healthy, Deebo Samuel was healthy, and George Kittle was healthy all at the same time. And that remains like the greater threat. I feel like the Brandon Ayuk's like wide receiver two candidacy. It's just that he does have the role we expected, but like that enhanced health makes it very hard to achieve those wide receiver two numbers. But also an enhanced level of worry, of course, after he fell behind Trent Sherfield on the depth chart. What is going on? So the crazy part about the 49ers being a week one lightning rod team is that they actually played super well. You know, they beat down the Lions. They kind of let their guard down in garbage time, prevent defense mode. But, I mean, they blew out the Lions. So for all the hand-wringing, they had a huge week one victory. The Tennessee Titans, on the other hand, did not. Were probably the worst team I saw live out of, like, the – 12 to 14 teams I saw live this week. The Titans are honestly probably the worst of the entire bunch. And we'll get into all the reasons why, but just kind of leading off. I mean, Is there any chance that Ryan Tannehill falls back into like Dolphins Tannehill without Arthur Smith? And where are our heads at on Ryan Tannehill?
Yes, possibly, likely at this point. It was ugly, like really ugly. We thought we would see, an extension of the Arthur Smith era with Todd Downing, taking over as OC in Tennessee. It didn't happen, and part of that was the use of play action. JJ Zacharyson mentioned on Twitter this morning, citing Pro Football Focus statistics, that the Titans use play action on 11.6% of their week one plays. That's down from a league high 36.4% in 2020. So, play action was a really important part of Ryan Tannehill morphing from subpar Tannehill in Miami to borderline elite passer Tannehill in Tennessee. If they have abandoned that concept for some reason, I think that, we're talking about a major issue for Tannehill and the whole offense. And, I tweeted about this today, and the pushback was, well, they were down. You can't use play action when you're down. Incorrect. You can use it. You don't have to establish the run. You don't have to run at all. Play action works no matter what. So the Titans should consider doing that.
I will say play action works if the other team is scared of your play fakes and respecting your play fakes. And I will slightly defend Todd Downing, because I felt like they were going to play action fairly often in the first quarter, and it was resulting in horrifically bad plays, like turnovers, sack. It was like the Cardinals had basically made a decision that they were going to sell out against these play fakes, even if it burned them, and it did not burn them in the first quarter. Taylor Lewan was just getting destroyed. Completely destroyed. I mean, gave up 5 sacks to Chandler Jones, to one player. By the way, if I'm a Titans fan, I'm very psyched that my left tackle has now penned a tweet about getting exposed in week one. I've never seen anything like that.
Don't do that. He doesn't have anybody in his circle who could say, you have to delete.
He was thanking Chandler Jones for his service of sacking him.
Thanked Chandler Jones for humiliating him in front of a national audience and 5 sacks, and getting 5 sacks against his quarterback and saying, this will only make me better.
Yeah. We all have to motivate ourselves in our own unique ways. But that was curious. But Todd Downing, I will say, that's not a viable strategy for a defense to ignore every play fake. So it's not like that's something you can like replicate, but it certainly felt like the Cardinals had made a decision like, just stay disciplined and ignore these play fakes and just blow up Ryan Tannehill. And that's what they did in the first quarter. And then they definitely did get away from it, because maybe it was just a matter of the blocking was simply too bad on Sunday. Chandler Jones was simply too good. It'll even out. They're going to up the play action, because it's hard to believe that was the whole formula the past 2 years, was the play action. It's hard to believe even like the most football guy-y of football guys could be that football guy-y and just totally abandon the play action. But I mean, Ryan Tannehill, I thought Ryan Tannehill's signature play as Dolphins quarterback was like not sensing the pressure from behind and like getting a helmet in his spine.
Getting crushed.
And that happened a lot on Sunday. And it's definitely – so if this was Arthur Smith, I mean, we just like, whatever. It was for some reason, Chandler Jones became Reggie White and they got killed. Like, I'm not really that worried about it. But with the no Arthur Smith factor, it is definitely a concern and something – so Tannehill, really tough week two matchup too, going to Seattle, a team that like erases the run. So like all the pressure is going to be on Tannehill. The pass rush is going to be able to like pin its ears back, and – Taylor Lewan's going to be like really put to the test again. And if they look as bad, even if they look half as bad as they looked in week one, the Titans this week, I would be very, very concerned going forward. So we talked about some of the most tilting teams. The single most tilting individual, I have to believe, was Urban Meyer. Even though we kind of had an inkling this was coming. Do we think he's actually serious with the Carlos Hyde thing, which we had speculated about maybe he would be. So I'm feeling like maybe we do think he's serious, since we already thought – as a possibility. So yeah, James Robinson to you. What do you do? Is there any way you can treat him as a running back two for week two? Where are we at?
No, you cannot treat him as a running back two going forward this week or otherwise. apocalyptic game script, and he ran a ton of routes, and he didn't do much through the air. He ran 33 routes against Houston to Carlos Hyde's 14 routes. You know, Hyde took a couple targets and a couple receptions away from Robinson. So it wasn't just the ground game where I have Hyde out rushing Robinson 9-5 against the Texans. They, of course, they couldn't run it much because they were down by a million like right away.
As you know, this that happens against the Houston Texans, though, you know.
Right, right. I believe I said that the Texans would win outright.
You did, but then you also got scared and backed off of it.
I did?
No, I did.
I backed off another. Oh, I backed off. I can't remember. I didn't back off that one.
I thought you did. Anyways.
Well, we'll have. There's no way to know.
There's no way we can find out.
No. We destroy all the tapes. So, yeah, the Hyde is a thing. I think sometimes we have to pay attention to certain narratives. I can't really tell you which ones to pay attention to because it's extremely subjective. But, you know, Urban Meyer bringing in like his guy, Carlos Hyde, was a sign. What was one of what eight signs that he wanted nothing to do with James Robinson as his primary back this year. So even without Travis Etienne, Robinson was barely usable for fantasy. It's bad for him.
I've been informed, by the way, by Adam Weiss that you did not back off your Texans prediction.
Thank you, Adam.
Yeah. So you're talking about like which narratives to believe, like which narratives to buy into. It's like football, you know, it's a game of small sample sizes. It can be really burn you, but you have to kind of seize on sometimes just a few details that maybe it is this like dot connecting stuff that's like confirming your priors, but it's like a game, a sport where you have to be comfortable making big decisions on kind of like not that many data points. And I'd say one situation where you do that is like if something immediately confirms like suspicions you had during the offseason. And like there was ample reason to be suspicious Urban Meyer was going to do this. And the fact that he did do this, I really do think kind of like makes this like an immediate action situation. And not that you drop James Robinson,
no.
But you certainly have. For some reason, if you have a contrarian in your league, like it was one game, I still believe in James Robinson. Certainly sell high on James Robinson, in my opinion. And I looked for people where you're trying to find any reason to be positive about James Robinson. And there wasn't like, well, he still ran way more routes than Carlos Hyde. I would say the fact that Carlos Hyde ran any routes was concerning because like Carlos Hyde's not a good pass catching back. And the fact they're having him run routes at all was not a good sign, not a good thing. And that, yeah, I think this is kind of like it's week one. Maybe this could make me look really stupid, but I feel like it is like a 5-alarm fire with James Robinson.
No, it is. I mean, but it was before this. That's what you're saying.
That really is the point. Yeah. Like, it was not a surprise. It really was not a surprise.
It was confirmation that Urban Meyer is not interested and still not interested in Robinson as his primary like workhorse back. Real quick, if I could just think too much about James Robinson for a minute.
You can.
He holds a special place for fantasy managers because he was one of the very rare waiver wire pickups or late round picks, depending on the size of your league last year, who became a no-brainer every week starter, played all the snaps, got a bunch of targets, was, you know, got all the goal line work for a bad Jacksonville team. So he is considered, you know, by people who had him last year and who, or who didn't, and who were jealous, who were deeply jealous that they didn't get James Robinson. Everybody is willing to say, no, 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 he's fine. He'll be fine. He's my guy. He was my guy last year. I think you have to forget last year at this point.
Yeah. No, he's just asleep.
Right.
Maybe made it too real. And we'll be right back. The regular season is in full swing, so get an edge on your competition with player rankings, projections, tiers, and alerts for players on your team or who you are eyeing up on the waiver wire by signing up for NBC Sports Edge Plus and do it at a discount. Use promo code GOOD10 and get 10% off your annual subscription. That is GOOD10 for 10% off at NBCSportsEdge.com/win. Denny, you know, the other day, you know, I'm just talking up our website and a promo, but the other day you were publishing some clickbait on it and saying Damian Harris was going to get benched. And It's real beneath our standards, some real clickbait nonsense. No, you were passing along the thoughts of the dean of Patriots beat writers, Mike Reese, who did. It was like Mike Reese, he like understands the Patriots thinking, like he's like in a Patriots authority. Mm-hmm. And he didn't say like Damian Harris's game costing fumble was going to get him benched necessarily, but he opined that like it definitely could result in a smaller role. And like, it's not just a narrative. Like Bill Belichick does have a really long track record of doing this. And he wasn't saying it was going to happen, but it was definitely saying it was in like the range of outcomes.
Sure.
And so how afraid are we of Damian Harris having a smaller role in week two?
Yeah. People didn't like that blurb. Turns out.
I would have headlined it different. I will be frank.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the lawyers can get into that.
Yeah. There are. Oh, believe me, they already are.
But yeah, I mean, it's happened before. And I think every fantasy manager who's played for more than a few seasons remembers times when Belichick has, you know, put running backs on ice after costly mistakes. And there's no more costly mistake than fumbling in the waning minutes of a very close game.
Yeah, okay? I mean, in defense of Bill Belichick, this did cost them the game.
This was and Ivan Fears, the longtime running backs coach for New England, was very frank and used language I cannot use on the air to describe that fumble and how Damian Harris had taken it. By the way, Harris stood up in front of the media and talked about it openly, and I think he should be credited for that. Whether that gets him out of the doghouse, I don't know. The good thing for Harris though is that Ramondre Stevenson also fumbled, and so he could be in the doghouse, in the rookie doghouse, which is much worse than the veteran doghouse. Especially with old coaches like Bill Belichick, old school coaches, you know. So I think that there's a good chance that Harris won't see a big reduction in workload in week two. We can't dismiss it though.
It's the rookie doghouse. I don't know if people remember this. The Zoomers won't remember this. The lone carry of David Wilson's career, a former Giants first rounder, was a lost fumble, and he literally never played another snap. Tom Coughlin forced him into retirement. You don't have to double check the details on that, but it went something like that.
He got hurt on the play. He fumbled for a touchdown on a Sunday night against Dallas. I remember it well.
I forgot he got hurt on the play. I think it was a really severe injury too.
Yeah, he broke his neck or something. Yeah.
No, he didn't break his neck, but I think he did hurt his neck. He did not break. Well, I don't know. It was bad. Anyways, I shouldn't have joked about David Wilson, but yeah, it's bad when you're a rookie and you fumble. And so like that is what Damian Harris hopefully has to fall back on. So Ramondre Stevenson also fumbled. JJ Taylor would be like the guy, but he's 5'6" and he was a healthy scratch for week one. You want to punish the second year player and Damian Harris for fumbling, but you also badly want to win. And the Patriots, I think in this case, do lack alternatives. And maybe it's the kind of thing where like, I wouldn't be surprised. Bill Belichick is not beneath stunts. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if like someone like Brandon Bolden or like JJ Taylor gets like the mm-hmm. first series or something.
Yeah.
But like Damian Harris is not going to be a healthy scratch. It's very difficult to see him not being the lead back in week two. And I'm actually keeping the faith and keeping Damian Harris ranked as a low end RB2. Is that crazy, Denny?
I don't think so until we see Adrian Peterson sign with New England.
Yeah, that, oh my gosh, don't even speak that into existence. And speaking of players who would have been starting if they had not gotten traded for the Patriots, was Sony Michel would clearly have been starting this week after the Damian Harris fumble. Yeah. He was still on the New England Patriots, but he's not. He's on, I almost said the St. Louis Rams. He's on the Los Angeles Rams. I have been of the opinion all summer. I thought that Sony Michel, so let's talk about a guy who falls in love with players, Sean McVay trading a fourth round pick. For Sony Michel, and we know these guys have GMs, but we also, these teams aren't doing this unless the coach is like, yeah, get me Sony Michel. We need Sony Michel. And I thought that Sony Michel would become the Rams' early down back eventually. We kind of talked about it. We knew that it wouldn't be in week one because he wasn't far enough along in the playbook process, but I was not expecting Daryl Henderson to play 49 of 52 snaps.
Yeah.
And for Sony Michel to play three snaps. And did we write off Daryl Henderson too quickly, Denny? Like, do we still think Sony Michel? So here's another situation. It's one game. It's very limited data set. But is this another situation where we have to like immediately readjust what we thought about the Rams backfield?
I don't know. It's hard because we Michelle hasn't been with the team very long. Of course, Latavius Murray wasn't with the Ravens very long. No. He ended up leading the team in rushes. So I guess that doesn't apply to every situation. But, you know, I don't think that they got Michelle, you know, they made that move for depth purposes alone.
A fourth round pick. Right. It's not even the teams overrate fourth round picks. I mean, that is like legit draft capital.
Yeah. Right. And so I don't think we're going to see a weekly distribution where Henderson's getting 20 plus touches and Michelle comes in to bleed the clock in the last couple minutes of the fourth quarter. I think that we will see more Michelle maybe starting this week. And he's worth holding on to. Now, if you rostered Henderson and you were confident that he would get the first crack at a workhorse role, it paid off. It paid off really well and good on you. I think you keep starting him. You keep starting him in a Rams offense that, and I know it was the Bears and everything, but they look great. I mean, that offense looked like a machine with a real quarterback under center.
Yeah, that was a real subtweet of Jared Goff. I mean, it wasn't even really a subtweet. I think Matthew Stafford was just like quote tweeting Jared Goff.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like, lol, like, look how easy this is.
Yeah.
And
it brings to mind the chatter after the trade of like, is this an upgrade?
Yeah. I mean, there was more chatter though. I think like, well, Matthew Stafford's going to win the MVP. So there's two sides of every contrarian take. I thought the contrarian takes for Matthew Stafford went like way too far. Like, well, now he's in the MVP mix. You know, you never had any weapons in Detroit. Like, Matthew Stafford is the first time he's ever had a weapon. Don't go to Pro Football Reference and look up the 2013 Detroit Lions roster, because Matthew Stafford has never had any weapons in his entire football.
Look, Stafford only got to play with the best receiver of all time, yeah. And you know that you have to take that into account.
But yeah, but you do. But yeah, also the down low MVP bettors were looking correct after week one, because
yes, that's true.
It is looking like a perfect marriage between Matthew Stafford and this Rams offense, and definitely looks like all gas, no brakes there with Stafford. But to the backfield real quick, like I was so much surprised that Sony Michel like only played three snaps. I would have probably guessed like 10 to 12. So three was a bit of a surprise. I was surprised that Daryl Henderson played 49 to 52, because Sean McVay has talked all summer about like Daryl Henderson basically can't stay healthy, can't hold up. And then it was almost like this had a total change in philosophy. Yeah. Like, well, whatever, we'll throw him out there. We'll see if he actually is durable. You know, if he gets hurt, we were expecting him to get hurt anyway. So kind of like put his feet in the fire and just see what happens. And what happened was he was pretty good and did not get hurt. So I agree with you. I think Sony's role is going to have to grow. But also that Daryl Henderson might kind of just like force the issue,
sure,
and be more of like a foundational back than we were expecting.
Also in that game, by the way, Henderson had a good game. Your boy DeMont I thought looked fantastic. What, since when is he the fastest dude in the NFL? When did this happen?
Well, ever since that graphic in that ESPN college game, that Iowa State game from like 2018 or whatever. I mean, yeah, he's been the fastest player all along. We just were refusing to see it. He does look – something looks different. He does look – this was happening in the second half of last season where he was looking quicker and faster.
He worked with a speed coach. The short of it is he worked with a speed coach this summer, this offseason, and it paid off. I mean, he looks like a completely different running back. That's my film analysis of David Montgomery.
We joke, but like even for guys who are like freak athletes who are in great shape entering the NFL – there's a difference between like great shape and NFL shape. It's possible it just took David Montgomery that long to like remake his body, because yeah, he does look different. And DeMont Nation, we are out here. We are excited. We couldn't believe that you fell to RB 18 to 20 in a lot of drafts. And we're all counting on you, David. Sticking in the backfields, it was Tyson Williams' season in the first half against the Raiders on Monday Night Football. Then Latavius Murray's season in the second half. Danny, will this be basically to say heads or tails? Is it already going to be Latavius' time for this week's showdown with the Chiefs, a team that has the Ravens' number, by the way?
Yeah.
Or are we still expecting Tyson to be the 1A?
I think Tyson is the 1A still, if only because of his passing down involvement. You know, he was, what did he catch? four. He caught four or five passes. I don't have it up right here. But last night against
no way to find out
against the Raiders again. Yes, right. There is no internet, and that's significant. It's something that we talked about very briefly, but in hindsight, I was thinking about it after a recent show and how important it could be. So the plan all offseason was Lamar Jackson's going to check down more to J.K. Dobbins, right? Who is a good pass catcher. Well, Dobbins goes down. That you know, philosophy and work presumably goes to Gus Edwards. Well, he goes down. It transfers then to Tyson Williams, who acquitted himself as a very solid pass catcher last night against Vegas. So I think that makes the difference for me. Now, I do think medium term and long term, I think we are talking about Latavius season. I wouldn't be super bullish on either back in a game against KC. I just don't think that they're going to be in position to, you know, get a ton of touches. Unless game script goes haywire and KC just can't, you know, put up any points against that Baltimore defense.
I mean, the ground is typically where you get the Chiefs, but it is the Ravens have something. Andy Reid has something on the Ravens and the Lamar Jackson offense because they've just played spectacularly bad against the Chiefs the past few years. And it could be really hard for them to get their ground game going. But I mean, we know though the Ravens are going to try to get the ground game. It's not like the Ravens are going to come in with like a big pivot. Like, well, guess what? We're not running. That you didn't see that coming. Yeah, Andy right. Reid, like they will be running. And I do think Latavius season is kind of on the fast track now. But so Tyson Williams had 3 catches for 29 yards last night. It wasn't an encouraging sign. He'd never had more than 12 catches in any of his college seasons. He was always kind of a part-time player, kind of a strange thing. But like Latavius, you know, he's not a pass catcher first, but Latavius is a guy who, like, if you need him to catch passes, like, he actually can catch passes. And it was strange. I mean, because Tyson had some nice chunk plays in the first half, and then he just, like, totally went away from him, basically. I mean, the whole offense was out of sync in the second half, but it did kind of seem like Latavius' season was getting fast-tracked last night. And my initial week 2 rankings, which you can find on our season pass tool on NBC Sports Edge Plus, I have Tyson ranked higher. But I wouldn't be surprised, like, over the next day or two as I dig into it more, if I end up flipping it a little bit. But it does seem like kind of what we all suspected. Tyson has the lead for now. Latavius' role is going to grow. I kind of feel like that is definitely how it's going to play out, and maybe earlier than we were expecting.
By the way, 3 catches for 29 yards for a Baltimore running back is like 14 catches for 250 yards for any other team.
So yeah, I mean, they're going around the locker room as we like making like Christian McCaffrey jokes about him.
Yeah,
right. It's like a huge, huge performance for a Ravens running back receiver. Speaking of running backs or receivers, I mean, we still never really quite figured out what Cordarrelle Patterson is. But like we spent the whole summer saying, I guess the Falcons don't have a number 2 running back. But they did, and it was Cordarrelle Patterson, apparently. His 7 carries were tied for the 5th most of his career. He had 54 yards on his 7 carries, with only a long of 14, which telling you like he was pretty consistently getting nice chunk gains.
Right.
Is there anything here? Do we roster Cordarrelle Patterson in 12-team leagues? Or is he just like doomed to forever be like this bit player, and there's really no ceiling, no room to grow?
We are rostering him.
Oh, no.
we're rostering him with much enthusiasm. And here's why. Mike Davis is just a guy. Yeah. He is a guy. He's probably a very nice fellow. He's a funny tweeter.
He does seem like a very nice guy.
He averaged 3.3 yards per carry against the Eagles. You know, he got all the backfield work that you could want, and he produced nothing. You know, he ran 31 pass routes to CPAT running. CPAT is short for Cordarrelle Patterson.
The Zoomers catch the Zoomers
exactly.
Yeah.
So Patterson ran 8 routes, saw 2 targets. Davis ran 31 routes, saw 6 targets. I could see that usage kind of evening up in the coming weeks. And it is pretty clear that Patterson – no. It's very clear that Patterson is the running back too. And again, if you are running back needy like me, I speak for the running back needy, you're excited. You're excited to pick him up. Now, he's no – you know, Cordarrelle Patterson, this is for the young folks listening. He's no stranger to this sort of utility role in the NFL. He most recently had 81 rushing attempts in two seasons with Chicago, and he had 42 rushing attempts in 2018 with New England. He's been used this way. We've seen it. He's actually pretty good at it.
It's weird because he is good at it, and he like pretty consistently like gets like 5 to 7 yards per carry, like kind of no matter the size of the workload. So I've always been a little surprised no one has like taken this further. Cordero Patterson, he seems like hard capped. Like his like absolute ceiling would probably be 10 to 12 weekly touches, but that would be more than enough to roster.
Yeah, sure.
Like you said, and like could definitely get himself in kind of like the explosive PPR flex mix. And it's not ideal. So Mike Davis is not ideal as an RB1 for your team. Cordero Patterson is not ideal, I feel like, as an RB2 for your team. But I do agree that there's something to explore here. There's definitely something to roster here. And I think it's hard capped, but yeah, I agree that Patterson belongs on rosters right now. And it's kind of an interesting situation to follow because he's a guy who's always seemed slightly deserving of a bigger role to me. And maybe the Falcons, he's just finally in the right place at the right time where they're thin at receiver, they're way thinner at running back, and maybe it's like kind of like the stars align for Cordero Patterson.
Another thing, I was just thinking of this, Arthur Smith is, open to using players in non-traditional roles. You know, he used Jonnu Smith out of the backfield, not often, but enough to be interesting when he was offensive coordinator in Tennessee. I don't think he's the he's definitely not an old school type who would say no. You know, Patterson is a receiver. When we saw that last week against the Eagles. Now, I will say this Falcons team could just be so bad that they're never in position to run, so it doesn't really matter what happens here. But Patterson should be rostered in 12-team leagues, yeah.
So, Danny, I hadn't told you this, but from the very end of the show, I have a quick rapid-fire planned where I say if we're concerned or not concerned. We might as well just talk about it now because two of them are Falcons. Are we concerned with Calvin Ridley at all? And obviously we're not concerned about like the box score for Calvin. We know Calvin Ridley is an amazing player, but are we concerned from the perspective of the Falcons offensive line yet again appears to be bad? Matt Ryan appears to be as old as ever. The Falcons receiver depth chart is so thin behind Calvin Ridley. It's like any chance that he just gets like game planned to death by opposing defenses, or is it just completely silly to worry about Calvin Ridley?
I think that Kyle Pitts' emergence as a legit weapon Ridley's fantasy value will hinge on Pitts emerging as that sort of threat. Pitts did not have basically any separation per the numbers.
Oh, no. Per the Twitters.
Yeah. Well, the next gen.
No, it is true. It is true.
In his debut, maybe that's just him getting acclimated to NFL defenses and speed and everything. But if he doesn't emerge as a legit pass catching weapon in the Atlanta offense, I think we will see teams totally clamp down on Ridley as the only legit weapon for Matt Ryan. It's not concerning as well.
No. And we know we've never seen 6'6" pass catchers struggle to separate. So this would be just unprecedented from Kyle Pitts, struggling. I agree with your take that I think they're like linked at the hip. Like Calvin really desperately needs Kyle Pitts to command defensive attention. Yeah. And I get there's probably a scenario where maybe Kyle Pitts struggles and he does struggle to separate, but he's still such an imposing target that even as he struggles, he still commands a lot of defensive attention. And so even if Kyle Pitts maybe statistically struggles, I think he could still draw enough cover, so to speak, for Calvin Ridley. But it was not a concerning game for the Falcons, like you said. Like they just cannot get this offensive line right. And they have the wrong quarterback behind like a bad offensive line because there's really no way. I mean, even Ryan Tannehill is like orders of magnitude better of an athlete as Matt Ryan. There's going to be nowhere to hide. Like you can't like play action your way out. Like I feel like there's just be like nowhere to hide for the Falcons and Matt Ryan if they don't get their offensive line somewhat settled, because he is just he's running on empty on the athleticism department.
Yeah.
And a lot hinges on that for the Falcons. Where are we, folks? Let's pull up my thing here. I'm a show outline. People know we plan these shows. Do they actually know that?
You plan?
I plan to talk about Zach Moss for some reason. Will he, is he going to stay a healthy scratch? And do you think the Bills are going to stick with this plan?
He won't stay a healthy scratch forever, I don't think. But, I mean, you don't have to keep him on your roster. Like, he's just a roster clogger. You know, we've talked about it. We talked about it last week or maybe on Sunday. It's hard to remember at this point. But, okay, so the best case scenario is Zach Moss gets half the touches in the Buffalo backfield, maybe gets a couple goal line touches. So what? So what?
Yeah, I mean, you might have drafted Zach Moss like higher than you'd care to admit, but I do think he's a safe drop. I don't think he'll be a healthy scratch this week. Joe Biscaglia, the very, very good Bills beat reporter, thought it was a mistake. And it definitely seemed like the Bills running game. I mean, the Bills do something like a team. They don't need to establish, but it did. It was a big problem for them against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. Like, obviously when your passing attack gets stymied, like it did, the Chiefs stymied the Bills passing attack. The Steelers did in week one. I mean, they did have nowhere to turn. But like, when this Bills offense is going right, Zach Moss does not fit it. Devin Singletary is the better fit. Matt Breida is a more Devin Singletary type talent than Zach Moss. Even if they don't healthy scratch him going forward, I mean, they think little enough of the player that they made him a healthy scratch for like the statement game of the year, you know, week one. So they clearly do not love Zach Moss. And I think Zach Moss, yeah, is a safe drop, even in like a 12 to 14 team league.
I have a little bit of breaking news here, and I'm heartbroken to report that Ryan Santoso, the kicker for Carolina, has been released.
Really?
By the team after I'm checking my notes. Oh yes, he made both of his field goals in week one, and he was promptly released.
Didn't they trade for him too?
I believe that's how he was acquired, and it's curious. I don't. Maybe we'll learn something else in the next day or so, but. Recommended him in my week one kicker column, and now he is without a team. Sorry about that, Ryan.
That's a real shame. That's very strange. I was kind of digging him. I remember there's something about him that was interesting.
He's large.
Is he? So that was that what it is? He's just a very large. He's a large adult son kicker, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, really? Yes. He's 6'5", 260. That's right.
That's messed up. You're scapegoating the wrong guy, Tennessee Titans. Your left tackle's pinning tweets about getting dominated, and you're out there releasing the kicker.
No, Carolina.
Oh, Carolina, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got every kicker memorized.
No, you're right, though, but Tennessee released Michael Badgley.
Okay, I knew there was some reason. Ficken season, didn't he?
They released the Money Badger.
Yeah, that's messed up. Ficken season, though, right?
No Titan kicker season is what it is.
We're almost out of time. Any chance, Taylor? By the way, how do you pronounce this new football team quarterback's last name? I can never remember. Taylor Heineken. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you live in the DC Metroplex. I mean, how do you pronounce this guy's name?
Right, Taylor lives just down the road from me. It's Taylor Heineke.
That's what I thought. I always say that, but I thought I'm right. Can this guy sustain Terry McLaurin, or is McLaurin in like the early career DeAndre Hopkins zone where he cannot catch a break, a quarterback? Are we worried about Terry McLaurin and Taylor Heineke?
I'm not. In fact, I think I hope Ryan Fitzpatrick gets well with his hip injury and everything. I think this is good. This is good for McLaurin. McLaurin produced, he was a wide receiver 20 in points per game last year with Dwayne Haskins and Alex Smith, with the worst quarterback combination in modern NFL history.
And not to cut you off, but playing hurt. Like, he was playing hurt a lot of the year, Terry McLaurin.
That too. And yeah, no, I he'll be fine. I think McLaurin will be fine. Should be a target hog. I still really like him. I still like Logan Thomas. I'm not too concerned for Heineke for real football purposes. I don't know. Who knows? But for fantasy, I think he'll be fine for that offense.
Yeah, it's weird. He's going to another meme quarterback, Terry McLaurin. So Taylor Heineke became a meme during the playoffs last year when he almost beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yeah. But I'm concerned for week two. I've got Terry McLaurin like down in the really low end wide receiver two ranks, just because on a short week making the quarterback change, James Bradbury has been pretty good since the New York Giants signed him. Could be a pretty tough assignment for Terry McLaurin, the backup quarterback. So I am concerned for week two, but I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick was going to, the dark underbelly of Ryan Fitzpatrick is that he was going to get benched at some point this season anyway. Sure. He's always more fun in practice than he is in theory. Like, it was going to happen anyway at some point. I mean, this could almost be the best case scenario, because now maybe Fitz will come back for the most important games of the season, have his Fitz games. Like, maybe he'll stave off exposure by being hurt earlier in the season. It's a real galaxy brain take.
Yeah, honestly, he was horrific in his 1.5 quarters of action against the Chargers. I mean, I'm talking like worst offense in the league type.
He was bad. I guess he was against the boy genius defensive whiz Brandon Staley. But yeah, it was not good. It was grim. That's it for our planned questions. We're going to end this real quick with some week one rapid fire of concerned or not concerned. And the answer is going to be obvious for most of these, but are we concerned about Josh Allen? Because he's had a few games, like at his past 5 or 6, where he looked a little bit more like 2018, 2019 Josh. He closed 2020 mostly on a tear, but he had a few like weird flashback games. Are we concerned or not concerned about Josh Allen?
Not concerned?
I think we're not concerned. Even though the supporting cast is like thinner than we would like to admit, I feel like. Like they need to force the issue with Gabriel Davis, because
he's still not playing much.
I know Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley are not going to take this offense to the promised land. They need, just like in terms of like complementary skill sets too, they need Gabriel Davis like commanding attention on the outside, like taking some heat away from like all their small guys. I'm getting a real football guy here, but they need a bigger role for Gabriel Davis. But yeah, it'd be silly to be concerned about Josh. I think the main takeaway from week one is that the Steelers defense is just elite again.
And always.
Concerned or not concerned about Saquon Barkley, Denny?
Yeah, concern. Extremely concerned. I mean, you can't start him this week. You cannot.
No. Can start him. You can start him. Because running back, if you look at these ranks, I mean, it's pretty dire already again by like RB30. Just like lots of like coin flip backfields. So you can start him. I don't know if you can. I think maybe you can't confidently start him as an RB2 is what I would say.
Okay, sure.
And he's
sure.
Just like a flex guy, a total uncertain flex guy against an elite defense.
Okay, but maybe you'll agree. 10-team leagues, you're not starting Saquon Barkley.
Probably not. Okay. I mean, get more teams in your league. I mean, that's not, I'm in an 8-team league that I love, just to be honest. Don't get me canceled for admitting that.
I will.
Mike Gesicki, concerned or not concerned?
Well, there was no, I feel like there was never really a compelling reason
to
start him. I didn't even like remember that he was in the league last week when I was making my lineup. So, move on.
Yeah. I'm concerned when you get outsnapped by Durham Smythe, by a considerable margin.
Yeah.
And the last one, the one you're probably gonna have the most to say on, are we concerned or not concerned about Greg Zuerlein, Denny?
We are not concerned.
All right.
We're not concerned. The Cowboys still, for some reason, let him kick no matter where they are on the field. I'm banking on that kind of opportunity to make him a top kicker. You know, he attempted 5 kicks in a loss, 5 field goals in a loss. That's significant. And any kicker attached to an offense that's just going to steamroll the opposition week in and week out and pile up a bunch of yards and breach the red zone, you gotta stick with him.
Yeah, they let him kick from anywhere on the field, also at any stage of his rehab from back surgery.
he clearly can't move well, coming out onto the field, and they're like, well, here's Zuerlein lining up for a 57-yarder.
That was one of week one's great little Easter egg. I think it was over 60. I'm not kidding. I think they let him kick like a 62-yard field goal.
Yeah, I think you're right.
He did not make it. But yeah, we're not concerned about Greg Zuerlein. And we are not concerned about being done with today's show. It's time to move on. We got to get on with our lives. We're getting on with our lives with just lots of great content at NBC Sports Edge. Denny's Target Decoder later this week. My rankings later this week. Podcasts on Wednesday, on Thursday, on Friday. There's so much great stuff. Breaking down week one. Looking forward to week two. Check it out. Listen to us. We will catch you on Wednesday.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also
at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of items like pavers or planters to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday Savings only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.